This is Kathy bringing you the first half of the Herald and Review, possibly some Decatur Tribune articles. Today is the Thursday, the 9th of June, and I'm going to start out with the headline, Former Wagner Casting Site to be Reborn. This was written by Allison Petty. Over its decades of operation, thousands provided for the families through jobs at Wagner Castings Company. It was a place where people worked hard, making automotive parts and an honest living. Founded in 1917, it was also a proud part of Decatur's legacy. About 1,000 people worked there in 1990. But business took a turn. The company changed hands, later becoming known as Intermet Foundry, and closed its doors in 2005. These days, the 34-acre site off Jasper Street looks like something out of a movie about the dystopian future. Brush grows wildly. Trees poke up through the concrete floors of buildings or in the places where buildings used to be. Trespassers have stripped wires and taken anything of value they could find. They leave things, too. Broken bottles, broken windows. Utility crews once discovered pit bulls chained to a fence in evidence that they were being made to fight nearby. Not to mention the obvious environmental issues, barrels of unknown substances, piles of material containing asbestos. How do you even start to fix a mess like that? Commercial real estate broker Tim Viewig plans to try. With help from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency in the city of Decatur, Viewig wants to clean up the site and develop it for productive use. The biggest picture, I think, is trying to figure out how to bring jobs here, Viewig said. I think this is a great piece of land to be able to do that, to build some buildings that get added to the tax base as far as property taxes and bringing jobs. The site was sold in 2008 to a group of Pennsylvania investors called 825 North Lauber, LLC. They demolished some buildings and sold materials for scrap, but the property eventually fell into disrepair. Property taxes were owed. The city performed some maintenance work and placed liens on the property. Now the city is positioned to take ownership, which it can turn over to Viewig. The Decatur City Council voted Monday to accept a deed in lieu of foreclosure on the property. The city will immediately transfer the deed to Viewig, managing broker of Viewig Real Estate, who negotiated the deal. I've been working for 2 years with Macon County trying to figure out how to make this a usable piece of property, and then we got the city and the EPA involved, Viewig said. With everybody's cooperation, we were able to make it happen. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency plans to spend roughly $2 million to remove hazardous materials from the property, a process Viewig said could begin in the next few weeks. Once they are done, he plans to remove the overgrowth and make the property presentable to potential tenants or buyers. I think it'll be a work in progress, but I wouldn't be surprised if we're not at least talking with folks within the year, he said. We'll start marketing immediately. For all of its obvious minuses, the property has a lot of pluses, too. It butts up against rail lines. It's already zoned for heavy industrial use. It's in the county's enterprise zone. The utilities and infrastructure are already in place. Plus, it's big. This is 34 acres in the center of Decatur. How often can you put together 34 acres, Viewig said. You'd have to buy 100 houses to put together 34 acres. The city worked with Viewig, Macon County, Illinois EPA, U.S. EPA, and Central Illinois Title Company for months to resolve the situation, Assistant City Manager Billy Tyrus said. Tyus described the property, which he has toured, as being in terrible condition and likely to remain that way unless this type of action were taken. We're excited about the site getting cleaned up, both from an environmental perspective and also the possibility of it being developed into an economic development opportunity that can create job opportunities, that could create economic opportunities that could help to return that neighborhood to what it once was, Tyus said. This has been an eyesore for a while. Sculpture Park Coming to the Scoville Area by Allison Petty. A new sculpture park will soon fill the area between Scoville Zoo and the Children's Museum of Illinois, officials announced on Wednesday. The Decatur Parks Foundation will oversee the project with a $250,000 grant from the Howard G. Buffett Foundation in cooperation with the Children's Museum, Decatur Park District, Decatur Area Arts Council, and Newhoff Media. 12 sculptures will be installed in July. We see the Scoville Sculpture Park connecting people to our community through tours, People's Choice Awards, education, exercise, family pictures, and unlimited other uses, said William Van Alstein, president of the foundation board. The foundation placed a call for submissions online and received 106 proposals from 41 artists from across the country. A committee narrowed them down to 24, from which the final 12 are still being selected, said Jill Appleby, the foundation's executive director. The sculptures will be on display for 2 years, with each costing the foundation $3,500 to rent for that time. They will be available for purchase from the artists, with 20% of the proceeds going to the Parks Foundation, Appleby said. In 2018, 12 new pieces will be chosen to replace them. The foundation will also choose a piece to purchase and display in the sculpture park permanently. That selection will be announced later this summer. New sidewalk loops through the area between the zoo and the museum while the sculptures will be displayed, and dead trees and brush have been cleared out to provide a more picturesque view of Lake Decatur. This park has so much more connectivity now. It's just going to be fantastic for recreation, said Brian Byers, a member of the foundation board and vice president of development for Newhoff Media. Buffett's donation covered the cost of the new infrastructure as well as the sculptures. The foundation will likely seek sponsorships of new sculptures in the coming years, Appleby said. Installation of the sculptures will take place on July 14th and 15th. On Saturday, July 16th, there will be a community walk with the artists present to share their stories. Jerry Johnson, executive director of the Arts Council, said the committee reached out to other communities with similar projects, such as Peoria. The process of choosing the sculptures was complicated, but what went much smoother than expected, he said. Decatur is a community that has always embraced the arts in all of their forms, from performing art to visual arts, Johnson said. Public art like the Scoville Sculpture Park brings art to people who otherwise might not have access to it. Members of the selection committee include Byers, Appleby, Johnson, Nicole Bateman, Kelly Smith, Patrick Hoban, Rachel Franz, James Sleitinger, Lisa Gillen, and Ryan Raleigh. This next article was written by Tim Kaine. Boomers grew up while pondering Muhammad Ali. Discussion about Muhammad Ali's death in my circles focused on youth and a world that doesn't even exist anymore. Ali's life was a continual adventure for baby boomers. His decisions drew lines in the sand between us and our parents, and even between one another. You may have agreed or not with the man, but his huge existence in the world stage forced you to make decisions one way or the other. How different is today's world and the world Ali came to dominate more than a half century ago? Apart from the obvious differences in technology, and make no mistake, Ali's rise owed a share to the technological breakthroughs of his time, the world of sport is almost wholly reversed. In Ali's day, baseball, horse racing, and boxing were the sports that drew national attention. The National Football League was a regional sport, and for all most of us in the Midwest knew, the only place they played professional basketball was in Boston. That wasn't the world we picked. It was the one we were born into. It wasn't better in every way or worse in every way. It was different, but it was all we knew. Ali fans knew exactly the kind of people who were fans of fellow boxers George Foreman and Joe Frazier, and they weren't the kind of people we wanted to be, and vice versa. Ali came into our lives at a time when boxing was so exclusive and technology was so infantile that our version of pay-per-view was closed circuit, specially wired venues, generally movie theaters, that would broadcast the fights in relative real time on big screens. Poor and smaller town kids wouldn't have access to those screenings, so a shared rite of passage among millions of us was lying in our beds with a single earbud attached to a transistor radio. Radio stations couldn't broadcast punch by punch, but they were allowed updates after every round. We clung to those precious updates, eager to be involved in the following day's conversations with our mates. It never occurred to many of us at the time how our friends could possibly root for Foreman or Frazier. Ali was attractive, and told us so, funny, articulate, cool, strong, and an attraction for the ladies. How could you not want to be like that? Those are the same reasons so many of us love the Beatles. But it also never occurred to us that Ali changing his name from Cassius Clay was as horrific as some of the reaction made it out to be. And while his decision to refuse to be inducted into the U.S. military was bound to divide a country, to this little white kid in a small town in the Midwest, who already thought war was a pretty bad thing, Ali made perfect sense when he said, "I won't be used by powerful white men as a tool to kill other people who are fighting for their own beliefs and freedoms, and neither should you, especially if you're poor and or black." That declaration, understandable, went over then about as well as it would go over today. But even when society was turning on him, he stuck to his guns, maintained a sense of humor, and was punished for his principles. We all almost are always at this some point. We all almost always are at some point. It's just that Ollie's principles put at risk his career, his freedom, and his legacy. After the Supreme Court ruled in Ollie's favor in 1971, he returned to the ring after 3.5 years away. The result ultimately was the most legendary period of heavyweight boxers in history. Ollie was the one who made it all matter. We followed him through the successes, failures, and ultimate downfall that came as he aged. He ever so slowly evaporated into a shell of what he once was, which was in full display when he lit the Olympic torch in 1996 to start the Atlanta event. For many, it was a triumphant crowning of one of the world's most recognizable and well-known men. For others, it was a sad reminder of the punishment inherent in his chosen avocation and the inevitability of time for all of us. Muhammad Ali will continue to reach across time for us, particularly those like me who think excessively about what we were and what we are and the conflicts and hypocrisies inevitable as we age. At age 32, Ali said, "The man who views the world at 50 the same as he did at 20 has wasted 30 years of his life. If you still think of him only as an athlete, you've got it wrong." And that was an editorial piece written by Tim Kaine. This headline reads, "Decatur celebrates National Cancer Survivor Day," written by Justin Kahn. Jim Massey is part of the growing list of participants at Decatur's annual National Cancer Survivor Day celebration. Massey, 75, who owned Jim Massey Realtors Incorporated for more than 30 years and sold real estate for 43 years, survived prostate cancer. He had surgery last month and was part of an event on Tuesday that drew more than 1,300 people at the Decatur Conference Center and Hotel. There was a dinner. Dr. Thomas Tarter, a urologic oncologist with Cancer Care Specialists of Illinois, was the featured speaker, and all survivors in attendance received a survivor's pin. "I'm here to celebrate," Massey said. "You go from the day you're sitting across the desk from the doctor and he says, 'I hate to tell you, but you have cancer,' and your life goes by in front of you and you kind of sink at your knees, to pulling yourself up with your attitude and support you have, to now. It's a good feeling to be a cancer survivor." Massey had a prostate-specific antigen, or PSA, test, and it showed he had aggressive prostate cancer. Massey's surgery was performed robotically on May 2nd, and he didn't even need the pain medication he was given after surgery. "You're in the hospital overnight, 2 nights at most," Massey said. "I'm 30 days out, and I'm doing wonderfully. You want to run the 100-yard dash with me? Let's go." Tarter performed Massey's surgery, and during his speech highlighted his journey to what he called the best job I've ever had, and also the improvements in cancer treatment through those decades. After moving to Springfield, he helped establish the Simmons Cancer Institute in Springfield in 2001 and began performing robotic surgeries in 2002. Then in 2011, after dedicating his life to making cancer survivors through his surgery and research, he became a cancer survivor himself. Tarter's older brother was diagnosed with prostate cancer that later killed him. After the diagnosis, Tarter got a PSA test, and it showed he also had prostate cancer. "I was with him a week before he died, and I told him, 'That phone call you gave me saved my life,'" Tarter said. "It made me get a PSA test before I had planned to." A year later, Tarter joined Cancer Care Specialists of Illinois. "I've never met a more caring group," Tarter said. "They took a chance on a surgeon, and I'm glad they did. This is the best job I've ever had. It's been a remarkable time to work in cancer research and surgery." The event was a joint effort between HSHS, St. Mary's Hospital, Decatur Memorial Hospital, and Cancer Care Specialists of Illinois. Valerie Jordan, St. Mary's Director of Oncology Services, has been involved with Decatur's National Cancer Survivor Day celebration for more than 15 years and is currently a member of the planning committee. She said it more than 1,300 people, about half cancer survivors, this year's event was the biggest year. "Every year my heart gets fuller because it means there are more survivors," Jordan said. "We're seeing advancements in treatment, but also in early detection. An earlier diagnosis leads to a longer survival time." Park District Movies concerts start this week. The season of free concerts and movies in the parks will begin this week. The Decatur Park District began showing movies on its inflatable screens in 2011. In 2014, it began a series of Shake the Lake concerts at Nelson Park, a partnership with Newhoff Media. Both traditions will continue this summer. A crowd showed up Wednesday to the first free movie, Inside Out, which was shown in Nelson Park, adjacent to the Overlook Adventure miniature golf course. The next two movies will be Star Wars The Force Awakens in Fairview Park on July 20th and Zootopia in Nelson Park on August 10th. Both will be shown at dusk. It's great for families to come out and enjoy that, and they can bring their lawn chairs and blankets and snacks, said Jamie Gower, Director of Recreation and Facilities for the Park District. The first of four concerts will be Friday. It is also the 95Q Fan Appreciation Concert, which could draw thousands of people if the weather holds up, Gower said. The acts are Brent Cobb at 7 and Drake White at 8:30 p.m. All of the concerts this year feature country music, Gower said. Toby Tucker, 95Q Station Manager Program Director and afternoon host, helps secure the musicians. He brings them in from different areas, different states, just to bring something new here, Gower said. He does send over who he is recommending. We listen to him and he's spot on with what he's wanting to do this year. The other Shake the Lake concerts are Friday, June 24th with Thomas Tillman at 7 p.m. and Aaron Parker at 8:30 p.m. Monday, July 4th with Blake Harnett at 6 p.m. and Maiden Dixie at 7:30 p.m. Friday, July 22nd with Haley Witters at 7 and Tara Thompson at 8:30. Concessions and beer will be sold at all of the concerts. Gower said they are family-friendly events. No personal coolers are allowed. This is an editorial. Our views. Sweeney case dismissed. Let's move on. It's time to move on. Hopefully that will be the result of the dismissal of former police chief Brad Sweeney's case against the city of Decatur. Macon County Circuit Judge A.G. Weber IV ruled that Sweeney was an at-will employee and could be discharged by the city at any time for any reason or no reason. The city has been wallowing in this case for the past 4 months. Sweeney's attorney said he plans to appeal the ruling, which is certainly his right. While it's time to move on to more pressing issues faced by Decatur, there are a few points about this case that need to be made. Sweeney, while popular as police chief, was not as innocent in this incident as some would have us believe. Whether he deserved to be fired or not is a judgment call that can be argued. However, court documents make it clear there were some issues with Sweeney's demeanor and performance. One aspect of the case that is still lingering is a special examination of City Manager Tim Gleason's use of a squad car to deliver him to St. Louis Airport on May 7, 2015. Gleason used an unmarked car and a police officer to drive him to the airport so that he could attend a local event that morning and still make prearranged travel plans. The examination of this matter might have been resolved by now if State's Attorney Jay Scott's office had handled the issue better. Scott's office requested a special prosecutor for allegations against Sweeney, and the prosecutor has said they won't pursue charges. When former police chief Mark Bartholomew filed a petition to ask for a special prosecutor to look into the Gleason matter, it eventually became clear that while Scott had sent the Gleason information along, he had not specifically requested a special prosecutor. That has since been done. We'd be surprised if criminal charges were pursued against Gleason, but this was certainly a poor decision by everyone involved. It shouldn't have happened, and it can't happen again. That brings us to a point about public perception. There seems to be a lack of understanding at City Hall that public appearances are important. That's certainly the case with the squad car incident. It's also the case with the fact that several command officers in the police department showed up at a hearing on the Sweeney case. Interim Police Chief James Getz, who attended while on vacation, said the officers were there voluntarily and wanted to report back to patrol officers what was happening. Whether the officers were ordered there or not, the appearance of so many officers sent the wrong message and should have been avoided. The city of Decatur, as well as the community as a whole, faces several challenges. As this case has dragged on, it's been distracting and expensive. It's time to turn the page and move forward. From the police blotter, boy whipped with hanger as punishment by Tony Reed. A Decatur woman is facing battery charges after allegedly whipping an 11-year-old child with a plastic coat hanger to punish him for failing to obey her command to pick up dog excrement. Sworn police statements say Felicia R. Beasley hit the boy so hard Tuesday night that patrol officers found four horizontal welt marks on his right arm between his wrist and elbow. Arrested at 11:30 p.m., Beasley, 33, was booked on preliminary charges of aggravated battery to a child under 13 and domestic battery. Beasley remained in the Macon County Jail Wednesday in lieu of posting $10,000 bond. If she makes bail, she is ordered to stay away from the home where the child lives. Beasley allegedly told the arresting officer she had told the boy to pick up some dog dookie, and when she went back to check later, she saw he hadn't carried out her instructions. Beasley stated she took a plastic hanger and hit him in the arm with it approximately 3 times, the sworn statements say. Beasley stated she aimed at the boy's arm and she had not been trying to hit him on the bottom. Beasley further advised that she did not strike his arm accidentally from him struggling or fighting against her. Police spoke to the child, who claimed he had in fact collected the dog doogie, but Beasley hit him anyway. This next is an editorial. What Others Are Saying, a Momentous Step for the U.S. 25 years after she burst onto the scene as a whip-smart but highly polarizing would-be First Lady of the United States, Hillary Rodham Clinton has done something no other woman has. After a grueling and invigoratingly close campaign, she stands alone as the Democratic Party's presumptive nominee to be President of the United States. Her achievement transcends politics. It marks a moment of celebration in a nation that took 143 years, longer even than it took to end slavery, to give women the right to vote, which has been nearly as slow ever since in affording them an equal place in politics, at work, or in the church. It was just 3 years after the close of the Civil War when 200 women, tired of feeling second class, convened at Seneca Falls, New York. It was America's first women's rights conference, and the women, along with about 40 men who joined the second day, ended up agreeing on 12 resolutions calling for specific rights. All but one were unanimous. But the exception was the ninth, a resolution calling for the right to vote for women. Many there feared it was too big a step and would subject the conference to ridicule. Still, from that simple resolution was born the women's suffrage movement that would, half a century later, result in the 19th Amendment giving women the right to vote. Texas became the first of only 3 former Confederate states to ratify the amendment, and in 1920, women were granted the full franchise here for the first time. It is against that backdrop that we pause to celebrate the fact that 97 years after women got the vote, they will face a choice this year that is not limited to a choice between men alone. The name of one of the candidates will be that of a woman who cut her teeth in politics by helping to register Latino voters in South Texas in 1972 on behalf of George McGovern. Voting for Clinton just because she is a woman, of course, would be foolish. So would selecting her merely because her election would make history on par with that made by President Barack Obama 8 years ago. But now is not the time to argue whether Clinton should be president. Nor is it time to revisit the many ways this editorial page has faulted her, sometimes harshly, for keeping a private email server and other mistakes. There is time yet for all of those things. Now we can all simply sigh with relief. At long last, we can now tell our daughters that they can grow up, just like their brothers, to see their name come election day at the top of the presidential ballot. That was actually taken from the Dallas Morning News. Moreau Forsyth Considering School Referendum by Chris Losvardi. The Moriah Forsyth Board is once again considering asking voters to decide at what level to financially support the district. The board could decide Monday whether to draft a referendum question to increase the district's tax rate that would be placed on the November 8th ballot. It held a special meeting Wednesday to discuss the issue and reasons why the district could benefit from increased funding. The administration, teachers, and financial advisory panel have provided the board with recommendations for what to consider priorities. We have to manage what we need and decide what's a priority, board member James Keith said. We have a menu to choose from. We've been unable to reach a consensus as to our priorities. Keith said anywhere between a 20-cent and 50-cent rate increase has been discussed. A 20-cent increase would generate an estimated $385,200, costing a $100,000 home $68 more per year, or $132 for a $200,000 home. A 50-cent increase would generate $963,000 at a cost of $167 for a $100,000 home or $333 for a $200,000 home. Residents at the meeting suggested the board stress what the additional tax revenue would be used to support. Voters previously rejected a proposed tax hike in April of 2015. Keith said the need to create a reserve has been discussed, along with reducing the student-to-teacher ratio, especially at the grade school level, providing additional services from a social worker, and doubling the number of students attending preschool. The goal is for students to be prepared to succeed in college or the workplace, one of the two, Keith said. Everything needs to move back from vet all the way to pre-K. Board member Lindsay Wise said she would likely support asking for a tax increase on the higher end of the range to provide students with as many necessary materials as possible. It sounds like we might be asking for luxury items, Wise said. We need to have some of these things or we're going to fall behind other districts. Board member Christy Harjung said remaining one of the best districts in the area will come at a cost, the amount of which needs to be figured out. We want to provide what is needed for our kids, Board President Russ Corey said. The board is next scheduled to meet at 7 p.m. Monday at the grade school in Forsyth. Superintendent Mike Williams said the board will need to have its legal counsel draft a resolution once it sets the amount of the tax increase. It would need to approve the resolution by August 22nd for it to appear on the fall ballot. Williams said the district faces uncertainty from the state of Illinois not properly funding education. He said decisions are being made to address the situation, with the district receiving about $1 million less per year from the state than it did in 2008. Williams said the district is concerned about the potential impact of a property tax freeze, potential for school funding reform, and pension obligation cost shift, all of which could affect the amount of funding needed from local taxpayers. Kano ramps up for biggest street festival yet by Allison Petty. Every year, the Coalition of Neighborhood Organizations throws a street festival with games, crafts, and food in Central Park. This year's event, scheduled for Saturday, is shaping up to be the biggest yet, with more participation from outside agencies and vendors than ever before, Kano President Sue Lawson said Monday. It's going to be a fun event, she said. Other than food and crafts that are for sale, everything else is free. As always, there will be entertainment, including the Decatur Power Tumblers and a bevy of fun activities for kids, such as gunny sack races, hula hooping, and watermelon eating contests. Adults will be able to talk to Decatur City Council and city staff members. The Decatur Police Department's K-9 and bike patrol units will be on hand, as well as the Decatur Fire Department. Neighborhood groups will be selling food as fundraisers for their activities. If you don't know what neighborhood organization you live in, you'll be able to get information as to that. The event will also feature free classes in jewelry making, birdhouses, and plants, with participants able to take home their work. The classes will start on the hour from 11 to 1. There will also be a number of craft and other vendors, as well as churches and agencies with information tables. We would just love for everybody to come out and see what Kano is about and see what other organizations we partner with. More information is available on the Kano Facebook page. The rate date for the event is June 25th. Kano is also hosting two free classes next week for children older than 8 and adults who live in Decatur. They are the Pie Making 1 to 3 p.m. Monday, June 13th, Freedom Assembly of God Church, 1005 North Brush College Road, and Canvas Painting 1 to 4 p.m. Thursday, June 16th, the Freedom Assembly of God Church. You can call Lawson at 201-7221 to register. And a local brief, drugs sniffed out. A Decatur man allegedly caught by police with a variety of drugs in his possession said he bought them to give to a new girlfriend who goes by the name Cupcake. The 46-year-old suspect's vehicle had been pulled over Tuesday night. A Decatur police dog allegedly alerted to the presence of narcotics, and police said several drugs fell out of the man's pants leg. They included a 2-gram rock of crack cocaine, a pink ecstasy pill, and 1.5 grams of cannabis. Sworn statements stated the subject told police he had bought the goodies off a dealer he met and he only planned to smoke the cannabis himself. He was going to bring the rest of the narcotics to Cupcake, the statements noted. The suspect was jailed on drug possession charges. In Shelbyville, Shelby County is warning drivers to be aware and anticipate delays as a widening project gets underway on Illinois 16 just west of Shelbyville. The construction will provide new turn lanes for an expansion of manufacturer IHI Turbo America. County Engineer Alan Spessard said the work shouldn't block the entire highway, but some on-lane traffic is to be expected. He said Sylvester Drive would periodically be closed during the work. This is Kathy signing off for Part 1 of the Decatur Herald and Review. Stay tuned. Part 2 will be along shortly.